Fearscape Media Network. Exploring the unknown. One podcast at a time.
Well, hello there, little black kitties of the night. Come and join me, your host, Deadly Debbie, as we go through my creepy files and listen to real-life, strange but true stories from people all over the world. Explore the weird and wonderful in my weekly podcast with Deadly Debbie's Creepy Files.
The SCP multiverse is under constant assault, and destruction can come at any moment. Therefore, having just one database is a folly the Foundation can no longer accept. Join Dr. Kevin Milgram and SCP-073, Kane, as they create an oral history of the SCP Foundation, in Memories of Kane, an SCP story, hosted by Daniel Doremus. For should the Foundation fall, the unkillable first murderer of man will live on. New episodes drop every second Wednesday of the month on the Fearscape Media Network. Visit fearscapemedia.com for more information.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. Happy that you're able to join us as we continue to explore and try to understand a strange phenomenon that seems to exist all over the world. Stefan and I are on a journey, and we share that journey with you.
Gentlemen, to another frightening, fantastic, phantasmagoric episode of Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. I am your host, Stefan Gearhart, and I am joined, as always, by my frightening, fantastic, and phantasmagoric co-host, Mr. Josh Rutledge. What's happening, big brow?
Big brow.
Yeah, I don't know, man. People are going to think I have a unibrow.
I don't know. I think I was going to say big bro, but big brow came out.
No, man, you know, things are good. Work's busy. I'm tired. But other than that, you know, it's all working out.
So. Same. I'd rather be out at a haunted house than working every day. These dogs are barking.
I would rather it not be 21 degrees at night so that I can sit out and stare at the stars. So.
Oh, I don't have that issue.
Yeah, well.
Now, Arizona did get Well, Arizona got snow, but Phoenix got the first snow it's had since 1998. Figures, the first winter I'm here, and I moved here because I hate the cold weather and I hate snow. It snows for the first time since 1998. But it only, like, so technically it only snowed in like a very small portion. But what did happen is this stuff called grapple. And that's like in between snow and hail. And so that's really what most of the parts of Phoenix that did get it was. It was technically like grapple. And it most of that was gone in like 20 minutes.
By the way, grapple sounds like it could be a cryptid.
It does. The grapple monster of Albuquerque. Phoenix, Arizona. Phoenix. Yeah. So, but yeah, it was crazy. They were losing their mind. But it was weird because it would just grapple or snow in patches, though the mountains around, like the high ones, still have snow on it. Those legit have snow on it. Well, so that's really pretty to see. But, like, it would snow in patches. So, like, literally, like, man, like half a mile from where I was at, it was pouring down raining. I was pouring down raining where I was at, but a half a mile from there, it was groppling. And so, like, I mean, my brother took a picture. The road was covered in grapple or snow or whatever the hell it was, and where I was. And then I was like, man, we didn't see any snow. And then I get out of the building. On the other side of the building, I see some snow or grapple around a tree, which meant it did on the other side of the building. Like, it was weird. It was really weird. So, but yeah, I'm done. Now, today it was 73. So I'm yes.
Also, I think grapple could also be like a 1980s casserole.
It also sounds like if the Frankenstein monster had a son, he would name him Grapple.
Grapple.
Yeah.
Bring dad grub.
Grapple.
Bring me grapple. 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 Also, yeah, this sounds like a food that you forage for. So Sasquatch eats grapple.
Yeah. So you have nice weather. Now, and then in the summer, your tires will melt and stick to the pavement.
Yes, yes, exactly. That's exactly what happens. So, but yeah, I'm looking forward because I know it's like full moonish. I don't know if that's tonight or last night or tomorrow night or when, because I haven't even looked at my calendar. But I'm excited to go out, look at the stars tonight. Because, like I said, right now, we are recording this, it is 6:30. Arizona time, which right now is Mountain Standard Time, and it is 73 degrees. It's beautiful. I drove home with the windows open and the sunroof open, and it's supposed to get down to like maybe 51 tonight, so it should be a nice night to sit on my balcony and look at the stars. So.
Yeah, we got a little bit of snow here, like 3 or 4 inches, and last night it was really close to a full moon, and it was so cool to look outside and see the landscape just completely lit up because of the moon. And then, of course, the snow all reflecting the moonlight. It was just really cool to see.
Yeah, no, Arizona's kind of the same way and the opposite, because there's not a lot of trees and green, obviously. So all the mountains around here are mostly rock and dirt, but that's a very light dirt and rock. And so, when the moon hits it, it just reflects it. Same thing with the sunset or sunrise. It'll hit these mountains and just turn the mountains pink. Or red or purple or orange, like it's gorgeous. And the moon does the same thing. It's really neat. It's not as neat as the snow, because that shit will hurt your eyes sometimes.
But anyway, so we're not the travel podcast. So let's move on.
No, we're not. But anyways, we have a really, really cool show now that we're actually getting to talking about it. We're going to be talking about our top picks for what we think is essential gear when you're out there UAP hunting or UFO hunting, or you've recently seen a UFO. We want to talk to you about what we've used on our journey to help us document and just figure things out whilst UAP hunting. But before we get into that, we've got to get to our first segment of the week. Ooh, June Blitzer, I feel you, June. We got to do our psychic word of the week.
And now, the psychic word of the week.
All right, psychic word of the week comes from the Encyclopedic Psychic Dictionary from June G. Bletzer, PhD. Rest in peace, honey buns. And this week, I spun the pages to landed on page 644. We're moving on up. The word, it's actually a word this time, that I landed on was transmutation. Ooh, already I'm like, oh, Full Metal Alchemist, like, that's where I'm at. It says alchemy says to change the basic structure of physical matter from its vibrational frequency to a higher frequency through an alchemical process of purification by intensified mind energy focused on the object and process. And it has a few definitions here. It says, one, to dematerialize an object by rearranging the atomic structure until it is ethereal in nature, and to rematerialize these atoms into the mundane plane in a higher vibrational frequency so it does not appear as the same object. Transmutation of baser metals into finer metals. Two, to dematerialize one's own body by rearranging the atomic structure until it is ethereal in nature, and to rematerialize one's body into the mundane plane in a higher vibrational frequency, keeping its patterns to some degree. Like, for example, alchemists can travel in the etheric world while in the ethereal state, distance and time span are not barriers, then changes back to a body according to the chronological time can function intelligently under the laws of each frequency. Ability to transmute does away with physical death and allows one to materialize in the place where and when needed. A glorified or purified body is accomplished after the psychic feat. And then it says, you can compare this to ascension. So
interesting. I you're talking about changing parts of your material self. So, something that I was meditating the other night, and I was in like this really deep state of meditation, and I had this thought pop into my head. It was like, hey, okay, now that you're here, you can change aspects of yourself. So like, if you want to be more adventurous, if you want to be more wise, but so like the way that it was phrased for me was, is okay, but you get one pie, and how you divvy up the slices for the parts that make you you, if you give more one place, you have to take it away from somewhere else. And so I started evaluating, like, again, in this meditation of, if I gave myself more intelligence, what would I have to take it away from? And at the end of the meditation, before like the session ended, I decided that I didn't want to change anything about myself. So it was just really interesting. But
yeah. Should have changed that brow. No, you know, it's interesting. You know, I kind of wish we still had John Tenney on this episode, because, you know, he'd know some transmutation stuff, man, being in magic and stuff. But yeah, I mean, that goes to that classic idea of changing lead into gold, which is what most people think of for alchemists. But yeah, I love this, because it talks about like dematerializing your body. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounded like it said, and into a different body.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah, so the whole thing of it is obviously you're changing. So it's not so like somebody might listen to this and think, oh, it's Star Trek, and you're, you know, beaming yourself. But it's not dematerializing. Like you said, it's not dematerializing as lead and coming back as lead. It's coming back as
you can beam yourself on your own time. I want you beaming yourself on my show, but
so a few years ago, it's been like 12 or 13 years ago, in a lab, they were able to beam a single particle of something. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
But what they actually said is that they didn't actually move the particle from one spot to another. They made a copy.
Right. Well, didn't the original, though, it had to dissipate, but the one that came out was a copy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's crazy.
So when you think about that, that means that if we ever have beaming technology, it would like basically make a copy of you wherever it is, and then the old part of you would just float away into non-existence.
Well, what I was thinking about was, what's interesting about it is, because we know as astral travelers, the ethereal plane is essentially the astral plane. And so this is insinuating that you are not taking your astral body or your soul into the ethereal world, but you are essentially taking your physical body with you into the ethereal world and are traveling, and then are able to materialize into a different body, but it is still essentially your body that has moved. So it's your whole physical body that's moving, not just your astral, which is being, you know, rubber banded back to you.
So it makes, what's that movie with Vin Diesel where like the Necromongers?
Pitch Black?
It's like the second one to that.
Chronicles of Riddick?
Yeah. So in that one, that guy is like been to the underworld and come back, and you remember he can like, so he moves his etheric self before his physical self follows. That's almost kind of like what you're talking about there.
Maybe.
So you have to go to the underworld and come back in order for you to be able to do that.
That's right. So, all right. Thank you, Junji Bletzer, for transmutation. We're going to go ahead and move on. Honey Bear. So let's go ahead and get into our cryptid of the week.
Hi, y'all. It's the Jersey Devil. Hope y'all are ready to meet some of my friends.
Cryptid of the week.
All right. We are thanking the Jersey Devil, as usual, for introducing us to his friends. However, neither of us have creepy catch-up this week. It has actually been a pretty mundane week, so we're actually going to do two cryptids this week, so I can feel the jersey.
Yay! I love when y'all be more of my friends. It's a party!
Yeah, we got it. We got it. It's a party. But yeah, so we're going to talk about two cryptids this week, so this is the cryptids of the week, or cryptidonon, right? Because non is multiple.
No. I don't think it
maybe I'm just kidding. That's not how English works.
Is it crypti?
Crypti, yeah. So for the very first cryptid of the week, what I have is the cryptid known as Charlie. That's Sharlie. This comes from Idaho folklore. Charlie also has some other names as Slimy Slim. And the Twilight Dragon of Payette Lake, which is like super just gorgeous.
Yeah.
Really. I told you I dated her and took her on a bus ride. Shut up.
Man. in Idaho folklore, Charlie is the name given to a sea serpent, much like the Loch Ness Monster, that is believed by some to live in the deep alpine waters of Payette Lake near McCall, Idaho. The very first reference to the sea serpent may be the belief of Native Americans predating Western settlement of the area that an evil spirit dwelled in the lake. The first documented sighting by Western settlers occurred in 1920 when workers cutting ties at the upper end of the lake thought they saw a log in the lake, but then that log began to move. And then in August 1944, the serpent was reportedly seen by several groups of people who described it as being 30 to 35 feet in length. I've also seen some that said 35 to 40 foot in length. I mean, that's a big difference. With a dinosaur type head and pronounced jaws, humps like a camel, and shell like skin. And then 2 years later, in September 1946, the serpent was reportedly sighted by a group of 20 people. Dr. G.A. Taylor of Nampa, Idaho, said this: "It appeared to be between 30 and 40 feet long and seemed to keep diving into the water. It left a wake about like a small motorboat would make." Then in 1954, Boone McCollum, editor of the Star News, held a contest to name the serpent of Payette Lake. The winning name, Charlie, was submitted by Lyle Hennifer Turry of Springfield, Virginia. In her letter to Mr. McCollum, she said, "Why don't you just call the thing Charlie? You know, Vasu der Charlie?" This was a reference to a popular catchphrase at the time, often spoken by Jack Pearl during his old-time radio show. So Charlie was then reported sighted dozens of times between 1956, and then the last documented sighting was in 2002. So this is just a reminder why you don't name something off of pop culture, because down the road, no one will know what you are talking about.
Exactly right. I mean, the description, though, sounds amazing. Something that the Jersey Devil definitely would have swiped right on, I think. So
I didn't have to swipe right. She was slimy. I just slid on.
Gross.
And it's gross.
Gross. Go back to your witch mom. Ugh.
Yeah, really. Hell. Okay, then.
That is Charlie. And again, if you are finding issues looking up Charlie, you can also look up Slimy Slim and the Twilight Dragon of Payette Lake.
So funny enough, the cryptid that I chose for my cryptid also is an aquatic cryptid.
That is funny.
Is it? I mean, that sounded like a courtesy laugh, like an over the top courtesy laugh.
I'm seriously laughing right now.
Anyways, so this is the Altamahaha.
Yeah, again, God bless you.
Yeah. And this is from Georgia in the United States.
Hot Georgia.
Georgia. 1969 is when it was first reported. So it's
69 a couple times.
You gotta stop.
1969.
You gotta stop. All right. A life-size model of a juvenile Altamaha, also known as Alti, in case you don't want to say Altamaha, is on display in the Rock Eagle Natural History Museum in Eatonton, Georgia. Another is exhibited at the Darien McIntosh Visitor Center in Darien, Georgia. It basically says, this is an eyewitness account. Indigenous people told stories of a giant river monster long before recorded history, but dozens of people have shared stories in the centuries since, including Benny Corsi, a Georgia fisherman. Benny Corsi wasn't headed for church on the Sunday he met the mysterious creature. Maybe if he was going to church. I don't know. According to the Augusta Chronicle, he and a friend were out to catch a few fish near Baxley, Georgia, on the Altamaha River. They didn't catch a thing, but they did see something amazing. It looked like a big snake, a real whopper, with its head reared out of the water, of course, he said in the article. But that wasn't the end of it. The massive creature, roughly 20 feet long, came right to at his favorite boat like it meant business. The gunmetal-colored animal picked up speed, undulating with up and down motion like a dolphin, not side to side like a fish. The wake it stirred up confirmed it was picking up speed. Corsi and his friend braced for impact, expecting the wooden boat to splinter, but the creature suddenly dove underwater, then reappeared on the other side of the boat. And there's, you know, more to say here, but so it's really interesting to have like a little depiction here of what an Alti pup looks like, and it kind of looks like a scaly otter. Otter
is what it kind of looks like. I'm pretty sure that this was the one. It turned out to be a hoax, but this was the one that three years now, around 2018, 2019, that they swore that it washed up on the beach, and they found a dead carcass. And so for months, people were like, oh my God, we found the creature. And then it turned out to be just like paper mache,
I remember seeing that.
Here it is. Yeah, it says it turned out to be a stuffed shark and paper mache to fill in all the...
Yeah.
You spent some time. So we still believe you, Alti. We know you're there.
But yeah, so I mean, really, it kind of sounds like... kind of like that kind of like otter or sea lion type, that... Especially the whole diving under the boat and coming back up, and that's the way they swim, is kind of like a dolphin. And
yeah, so it's like a weird hybrid. Yeah, like an otter and a dolphin, and maybe even like a Loch Ness monster type. I don't know.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting the amount of cryptids we have just in the United States.
Oh, so, I know.
Per state, it's insane. So, but yeah, thank you, Josh, and thank you, me. Thank you, Jersey Devil. Nope.
Shutting down.
All right, well, let's get to our last segment, our UAP sighting of the week. All right, Josh, what do we have for our unidentified aerial phenomenon sighting of the week? I'm very curious to see what you found this week.
Yeah, so this comes from Barbersville, West Virginia. It's a little bit of an older sighting. It's from December 2019. But I just, again, kind of like how you just randomly pick things in the book, I've gotten to where I just randomly pick something on MUFON, and this is what I came up with. So,
all right.
This light was picked up on my dash cam on the way home from work. It first appeared as a small dot of light similar to an aircraft light. Then almost immediately it brightened and grew in size. It appeared to become square or rectangular and hovered below a cloud cover. It appeared to be somehow connected to the cloud. It was obviously very large due to the distance up in the sky that it was from me. It was directly in the eastern sky. I would estimate a few miles or more from my location, traveling east on I-64 at the Huntington Mall exit. It lasted about 3 minutes and drifted right back up into the clouds that it seemed to come from. My first reaction to it was, I wonder if the other driver saw it. Certainly they did. They had to. It was too obvious not to have seen. I also thought to myself that I can't wait to get home and watch the 6 p.m. local news to hear them report on all the people who saw the sighting. I was really amazed and disappointed when that didn't happen.
Ain't that a bitch? Yeah. Like, seriously. Like, and that's the thing. So, by the way, I'm actually getting my phone call interview with the MUFON field investigator in Arizona. It's not Shane Hurd. but I've got my interview with her tomorrow. And yeah, that's already my thing, is I'm going to be like, she'll be like, well, I didn't see it on the news. I'm like, well, how come I was the only one who seen it? You know, like, that's what you always wonder. Cause like that, man, like the three lights that I saw that one night driving to my nephew's house, like that, I didn't see anything in the news about it. And then, so then of course it makes you wonder, it's like, did they only want you to see it, or just people not saying anything, or did they just go, oh, that's an airplane or what? So I don't know. So
yeah, I mean, it is. Well, and how many people look up and see stuff that they just immediately dismiss as an airplane? I think it takes the right kind of person to look at something.
Right. And, you know, like one of the things my wife always says to me, is, you know, she's like, you always have a story when you come out of like the public restroom or at the store or something. And I'm like, it's because I'm observant. I pay attention to what people are saying or things that happen. And it's like my brain documents that stuff. But not everybody does that. She doesn't pay attention to anything that's not within her immediate bubble, you know, like,
right.
I'm like, did you not just see that giant deer run across the road? And she's like, there was a deer.
Well, that's like, my wife fully trusts my driving, but doesn't trust everybody else on the road. And so typically if we're going somewhere as a family and I'm driving, she's looking at her phone because she's trying to keep her mind off of
That's what my wife does too.
And so, she misses all kinds of stuff. I'm like, oh, did you see that? Nope.
No.
So, but yeah.
So yeah, very, very interesting sighting. Always encourage people to.
I was trying to look and see where this is in relation to.
Point Pleasant.
In relation to the injured cold. Because West Virginia, it's like up. It's up near the, Barbersville is close to Huntington, West Virginia, which is up around like the Ohio, West Virginia part. So it's probably
close. That would be like, close to that
it's
area.
Like it's close to Ashland from the Hellier folks.
So I think what did we say Ashland was like maybe an hour from Point Pleasant?
Yeah, so it's got to be in that same little area there. So cool. Interesting.
All right, we are going to take a quick ad break, and then when we come back, we're going to be talking about suggested tools for the ufologist, and by ufologist, I mean me and Josh. Make sure to stick around. We'll see you in a few. Hey everybody, Stefan here. This episode is sponsored by the great folks over at Box Mountain. Box Mountain is a subscription box service that has my favorite sub box yet, the Cryptid Crate. You see, Josh got one of these for his birthday, and I was super jealous because it was packed full of merchandise pertaining to cryptids. The box he received first was all about the Flatwoods Monster, which of course is one of our favorites. And it had a t-shirt, a book, a patch, mug, and some awesome stickers. So I checked out the price to get one for myself, and let me tell you, it is well worth the value. These make excellent gifts for yourself or even friends that are cryptid lovers as well. Now, if you use the coupon code Fearscape, you will get 25% off the first month for any new subscription or 10% off individual purchases. So go ahead and head on over to fearscapepodcast.com/cryptidcrate now and get yourself one today.
You've heard us talk about all the amazing books we've been able to listen to on Audible. Everything from fiction to sci-fi to true crime and more. Audible is the leader in the audiobook industry with a library of over 200,000 audiobooks. Start listening now by going to fearscapepodcast.com/audible.
Welcome back. Thank you guys for sticking around after the ad. We are here. We're going to be talking about suggested tools to use for ufology. So to essentially go out there and do some UFO or UAP hunting. And the tools, we talked a little bit about this with Shane Hurd, which again, I want to highly recommend his book. Just go ahead and type in Shane Hurd into Amazon. You'll find it. It's How to Be a
Field Investigator.
Field Investigator. Thank you. My brain died. It just went out the door and died. Now we're going to have to investigate the ghost of my brain. But no, we're not talking about ghosts. We're talking about the tools of ufology. And we don't. People don't usually talk about this, no. Josh. That's one reason I was really excited about this topic is because, good Lord, there's a million podcasts on the tools for ghost hunting.
Right.
Right. Or even cryptid hunting.
You know, I myself have been on a search lately to try to find a good video camera for UFO hunting. Because, you know, most cameras don't record in like low light or no light situations.
Right. Do you remember like in like the late 90s, early 2000s, it was like every camcorder had night vision and then it went away because people were like doing it during the daytime and you could see through girls like dresses to see their underwear. Do you remember that?
I don't recall that.
I do, and that's one of the biggest reasons they got rid of them is that like people were using it to like see through light colored shirts and stuff.
Huh.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Old school pervs for the win.
Well, you know, and so we're going to talk, you know, now the tools that we're going to talk about tonight are not necessarily video equipment. It's more around you think you've seen a UFO, you think you've seen a UAP. And just like we talked with Shane, you have to do your due diligence to disprove, if you can, or not necessarily disprove, but to account for what you've seen, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you have to be able to say, was it an airplane? Was it a satellite? Was it the International Space Station? So on and so forth. And if all those things could be ruled out, then all that's left is an unidentified aerial phenomenon.
Right.
So we're going to talk through some of the things that you and I use when we have been out in my backyard and when you've been out in Arizona and we've seen things and what we use to kind of account for the known so that whatever's left is the unknown.
Right. And I will tell you this. I think I mentioned this, but I did finally talk to the field investigator here in Arizona about my sighting after Christmas, Marsha Beery. And, whoo boy, she was diligent. I mean, we probably talked on the phone for a solid hour. I mean, she had some good questions that made me think. And learn how to use descriptive words better and things like that. It was very, very interesting. And so right away, like the number one tool that I have realized that goes along with UAP UFO sightings is your eyes and your recollection.
Well, like one of the things that I've gotten to where I do, and you know, because you have been the recipient of these such things, mm-hmm. is I usually do like at the time of or close to the time of a video log of what I saw. And I try to be as descriptive as possible because what I've found, and this is, I think this is true of me and probably true of most, is that we as people are not always the best at gauging distance.
No, right? And I just talking to her, like she was trying to get a better idea of distance and where it was on the horizon. I'm like, you're asking the wrong person.
But I mean, it's like if you were to show someone and say, okay, how far do you think it is from the ground to the top of this tree? You would probably get a varying amount of answers
for sure.
Probably most of them would be wrong.
Usually what I try to do is I'm like, is it twice of me? I know I'm 6'5". So yeah. Close to like 13 feet. Like that's literally how I judge things is based on my height.
But also, but like even in that situation, is the ground sloping up?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, yeah. You know, there's a lot of different factors to take into play. So that's what, like, usually when I'm being descriptive around about the placement in the sky, I think about, okay, around where I live, right? You've been out there several times. We've gotten like the UPS planes flying over, mm-hmm. and different airliners and things like that. And then there's been times when like smaller planes like Cessnas and things like that will fly over. And then there's even times when helicopters will fly over, and they all fly at different altitudes. And so what mm-hmm. I think about is I say, okay, was what I saw about in line with like a helicopter? Like what level a helicopter flies? Was it in line with like a small aircraft, or was it higher up with like, right. you know, the commercial craft? And so in a lot of times, you know, they're really high up, like yeah. almost satellite level. So,
well, and that was something that Marcia suggested. She was just like, you know, if you ever see anything again, quickly like look around the entire sky to see if you see a plane or a helicopter so that you could get an idea yeah. For height. Like, is it higher than the other aircraft that you see around, you know, stuff like that. And I think that's really good, as well as your video log as well, because, you know, thinking, I always think back to Serial, the podcast, season one. They talk a lot about this, you know, 20-year-old case or whatever, and she spends an entire episode talking about memory and how, you know, how memory changes over the time, especially when you're influenced by other factors, other things, just this, that. Right. And so if something happens and you're able to remember it right away, to definitely make an audio log, write it down, make a video log so that you can go back to that original memory so you can know where the truth sits as opposed to what it possibly has become over time.
Right. And even, you know, for myself with my eidetic memory, I can still go back and really play back the night to my, you know, just like I saw it when it was happening. Mm-hmm. But even for then, it's still hard for me to think about, okay, about where in the sky, you know, as far as how high it was. So it's nice to be able to make those recordings, or like you said, write it down. But I mean, really, I just like take my phone and do a little quick, you know, selfie video and just say, hey, I just saw this, and this is what happened, and this is what time of night it was, and da-da-da-da-da-da. So it's just a nice little video account. And then, of course, everything that, at least in my case, everything that I record gets backed up to the cloud somewhere, so I can then go back and rewatch and replay that information later if I need to.
Right. So what other tools? So what are we looking at here, Josh? What do we got for if you're interested? So this is basically not just if you're into field investigation, you want to go out and look, but also if you've just recently seen something.
Yeah, I'd say that. So I've got a folder that I keep on my phone. It's called UFO, and this is where I keep all these different apps in it. And, you know, back in the summer, I used to have an iPhone, and all of these apps were available on the iPhone, too. But I want to start off with the one of my favorites is the ISS Live.
Yes.
So that's International Space Station Live. And what it, so as an app, it does two really, really cool things. It probably does some other stuff, but these are the two things that I use it for. One is it tells you where the International Space Station is. So if you just maybe want to go out and look at the International Space Station, like you're not going out to look for UFOs, you just would like to see the International Space Station fly over, this is a nice good app to see where it is now. And then it'll actually, you put in your location and it'll tell you when you can see it, mm-hmm. when it's going to fly by. So,
which in and itself is really cool,
right?
You know, like I remember yeah. catching it when I was a kid, you know, and I just always thought that was so cool.
Yeah. And it also has a live stream function as well, so you can actually, the many cameras that are set up on the International Space Station, you can watch live streams of them. Now here's the kicker. NASA, like back in the mid to late 80s, used to live air all of their streaming video, and it's crazy to think about the fact that in the late 80s, NASA had streaming video on the International Space Station.
Yeah.
But they used to live, you know, live feed. Well, the problem is that people kept catching UFO and UAP stuff.
And there was a lot of those on YouTube.
Yeah. And there's a lot of really incredible things that people caught. And so now they actually run it through a time delay. And if they see something, you know, that might, then they'll like switch to, like they'll switch to another camera, or they'll pan away and like look somewhere else.
Why would you do that, NASA?
so if you're ever watching that live stream and you're like, oh, this is really cool, and then all of a sudden the camera pans to completely nonsensical place in the sky, then that's probably why.
Yeah, that's when General Zod and Ursa and Non flew by all of a sudden.
Yeah, exactly.
Something
happened. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be UFO. I mean, it could have been, you know, military satellite or something.
Sure, yeah, that was part of it too. Yeah, or even seeing, you know, a USSR or something or other.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that ISS Live View is a fantastic app for knowing where the International Space Station is. The next one that I have on my list, which is equally important, is Find Starlink.
Good Lord gods, yes. Yes, please. please download this app.
Well, in for me, and I know, you know, we saw Stefan that time out at the Waverly Park, all those, you know, kind of things coming in succession, you know, almost like straight in a 90-degree line with us. And we got on, you know, we hopped online, we posted about it, and people were like, oh, it was Starlink. And so the nice thing about this app is that a lot of people don't realize that there are lots of different Starlink trains. There's not just one Starlink train. Right. And then more are going up. Like, you know, they just put a bunch more up in space.
Yeah.
Now, one of the nice things about the more recent launches is that astronomers amateur astronomers and professional astronomers complained about the night pollution that was being generated by the Starlink satellites. And they're like, I think they're like a quarter of the way through what they're going to launch. I mean, at some point in time between Musk and Jeff Bezos, there's going to be enough Starlink type satellites in space to blanket the globe in high speed internet. So it doesn't matter if you're on a 3-hour cruise and you're
Gilligan.
Yeah, and your boat wrecks on a deserted island, and you've got, you know, your skipper and the millionaire and his wife, yep, you know, and the movie star, like you're all stuck there.
Professor
like
Marianne.
How the hell are we gonna get off this island? All somebody has to do is whip out their phone and hook up to the Starlink network and call for help. So, I mean, but one of the things, so like the trains 6-1 through 6, they had their solar panels were positioned in such a way that they reflected light back down to Earth. And a lot, I will say, I mean, I've seen some of the reported UFO sightings, and I'm like, that looks a lot like Starlink. And so... Mm-hmm. It's just one of those things where you just have to check and see if what you're seeing is Starlink. And so that Find Starlink app is a really good tool for that. Not only does it show you where Starlink is in relation to your location, it also has the ability for you to go back in time and see where it was when you had your sighting. So then you can quickly rule out was what I was seeing Starlink or not.
Right, which is how we were able to rule that out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep, because we went back and realized it was at a different time.
Yep. Also, most, like I said, after I think it's like train number 6, they've adjusted the solar panels so that they won't reflect light back down on Earth. That was the whole point about the, you know, amateur astronomers complaining. So now... train 7 in all further launches will all be set up so that they don't reflect a light, so they will no longer be an option to be confused with a UFO or something.
Right. So let's hope that Jeff Bezos and Amazon follow suit as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, it kind of makes me wonder if the amount of all these kind of satellites being launched, it seems like we should have some sort of a international agreement on, you know, kind of like you in certain places in the world, you can't have buildings over a certain height because it takes away from the view of the scenery and and things like that. Like there should be some sort of an agreement that says, hey, amongst the space faring agencies in the world, when we put up a satellite, we're going to set it up so that it doesn't generate light pollution, if you will, in space.
Right. Agreed.
And then the other really nice thing about that, again, so these apps are great for two things, right? We're talking about them from a UAP UFO perspective, but also if you just want to see Starlink, because it's pretty amazing to see it,
especially when it, like, depending A, where you're at, and B, where it sits on the horizon. Like, there are videos that I've seen that are mind-blowing because it just looks so big because it sits kind of low on the horizon. Yep. It's in an area where there's not a lot of light pollution, and so it looks insane. And that's what I want to see. I want to see it when it's like that.
Well, and I've seen some videos of there's one train that's really closely grouped together. I mean, that's what it looks like to us. I'm sure in space they're like miles apart, but but it looks like it's really closely grouped together. And I've seen some videos of them like going across the sky, and it's just crazy looking. It's just like this long succession of like 150 lights moving across the sky.
I know, it's like a satellite funeral procession.
They've all got their little flags sitting on top.
Yeah, it's all for like whatever satellite fell back into the earth.
But yeah, so I mean, it's really cool to see if you have an opportunity. And like I said, this app would allow you to not only see where they were when you had your sighting, where they are now, but also to project where they might be so that you can go out and take a look. Yep. Now, generally, when they're seen in the sky, they're like seen in like between like the 10 and 45 degrees in the sky as far as, you know, from your position. So, like, if you're surrounded by trees, you probably won't be able to see them. But if you can get up on top of, like, a hill or something like that where you don't have that tree line interrupting your view of the sky, it's a pretty cool sight to see.
Yep. It's pretty awesome.
Which is also why we were able to roll it out, because not only does it tell you where they are, but it tells you where to look in the sky to see them, and it gives you that kind of degree in relative to where you are. And so in our case, they were passing again in like a 90 degree, like directly overhead. And so that's also a way we were able to roll it out as being Starlink, because none of the trains pass at that angle.
So what else do we got?
All right, so next up on my list is an app called Sky Safari. Now, this used to be only on Apple, and then a couple years ago they worked it out to be on Android as well. Worked it out. You know, Android has Android.
Can't work it out.
Yeah, Android doesn't care what kind of you put on. So, but if you, it's pretty much like if you can get your app on Apple, you could probably put it anywhere else. It's like so. But Sky Safari is, I mean, it's basically a. It's meant for people who just want to go out and look at planets and stars. I mean, it's basically.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. I used to use another program and it was pretty good too, but yeah, you definitely won me over on Sky Safari.
So, you know, it's just, if you want to go out and look like right now and see what planets are out, what stars are out, what constellations kind of look at.
What satellites are out? Like, that's what I like about it.
Yeah, so that's one of the nice big features about it is so Starlink app shows you the Starlink satellites. International Space Station shows you the International Space Station. But Sky Safari tells you all of that. It tells you every satellite that's in the sky at the time that you're looking. And not only that, but you can, if you're in the app, you can again, go back to, you can go back in time, you can go forward in time, and you can look and see where things were, where things are going to be. And I've actually used it. I was out with my family one night around a campfire in the backyard, and I saw something. I was like, oh, look at that, moving across the sky. And then to do my due diligence, I checked on the app. Turns out it was a satellite. But I'm glad to know what it is, right? Yep. Because I wouldn't want to claim it to be something only to have somebody come along and say, nope, see, here's where a satellite passed directly overhead of you. So, but yeah, we've actually used it before, even to go back and look at, you know, times where we saw things to see, could we have seen, you know, could it have been a star? Could it, because there are some pretty bright stars in the night sky. So depending on where you are and how much of the night sky you can see, could it have been a star? You know, could it have been a planet? Could it have been, you know, like the Pleiades or something, where it looks like it's really big, but really it's just a big grouping of stars, you know? So,
right.
If you do the paid version of the app, which I have not, but if you do the paid version of the app, you can actually zoom in and see information about planets and stars on the map. So if you're, you know, you want to zoom in and look at the surface of Mars, you can do that based on, you know, pictures that satellites have taken.
Or just learn what star that is that you're looking at, you know. Zoom in on a star.
It has quite a significant collection of all the different stars, or let's just call them all the different bodies that are in, you know,
all those heavenly bodies.
But it's also really cool to see the different constellations that are out every night as well, and kind of what stars make up those constellations.
Yep.
And if you're kind of a mystic, as we tend to sometimes view things, then it's, you know, you might look at it and say, hey, when I saw my UAP, it was while Orion was out. And then two nights later, I was out looking at Orion and I saw another UAP. So then maybe there's some kind of a correlation between the UAP and Orion for you, or just in general. So yeah. So the next two that I use a lot of, it's an app called Flight Aware.
Yes, another one that I'm like, dear gods, yes.
The other one's called Flight Radar. So they're both, flight. Well, the last one gives it what it is.
They're both flight risks.
They're both, flight risks. They're run away. They're both flight radars to show you, you know, what aircraft or what registered aircraft are in the air. And you might say, well, why do you make the distinction of registered aircraft? Well, because military aircraft don't need to register with civilian towers all the time. And so if you see something flying over and it's not showing up on the map, it's, chances are it's probably registered with some government agency and they don't have to register with a civilian tower. But I've also seen some things where I've questioned what it is. Like, it didn't have the standard, like I couldn't see the standard notification lights or anything like that. And so even though it looked like it might have been an airplane light, because, you know, airplane lights, those front lights are definitely more, I don't know, incandescent almost in the way they shine. And a lot of UAP and UFO look to be more like LED, like really white, bright light. And so I've seen some of those before, and I've always looked at this app and see, you know, what airplanes or stuff are in my area at this point in time. And it has been very helpful, again, in ruling things out. Because even though you say, well, it could be a military, like you just said, it could be. But in my case, the one that I saw a couple weeks ago in the sky in the morning, most aircraft, even if it's military, don't get brighter and then disappear.
Right.
So But I mean,
it's just another way to narrow it down. You know what I mean? Because, you know, there are a lot of theorists that do believe that UAPs and UFOs are indeed secret military. So, you know, you still may be correct thinking, oh, well, right. It could be military. But yeah, it's I believe you can go back and check certain times as well on these, right?
On one of them, you can.
That's what I thought, because I thought we did that for Santosh when he thought he had seen something. We were able to look back.
One of the two you can. So the reason I have two, though, is because sometimes things show up on one that don't show up on another. So, like, I'll go and check one, and if I don't see anything, then I'll go and check the other, and boom, there it'll be. It'll be some craft that for some reason doesn't show up on the other one.
Right.
In my opinion, the one called Flight Aware is the better of the two as far as from a user interface perspective. You can also easily change the location. So that night that you told me you saw something kind of off to the side of the mountain, right. You know, I went out to your location to see, you know, were there any aircraft flying in the area. Now, Grant, you know, you're close to a military base, so it's very possible it's military that, you know, what you were seeing. But we also don't know. So, so it's this really cool little app, and you can actually overlay satellite and stuff like that. Like, I found out that there's a guy that doesn't live too far from me who owns his own helicopter. Must be nice. So, like, a couple of nights a week, like, he just buzzes, you know, he buzzes my house, and I look up here to see where he's going. Like, oh, yep, he's going back home. So, like, I zoomed in all the way, like a Google Maps type overlay, and yep, he's got a helipad and a little storage shed to keep his helicopter in, and it's like, yeah, buddy. So
yeah, because helicopters are also on that app.
Yep.
So I'm wondering if drones are going to end up being on those apps.
Well, see, I think they would be, because you have, well, commercial drones have to be registered with the FAA. So I would think that they will, if it's a commercial drone, it'll have to be. If it's a private, like, you know, you buy a drone on Amazon and you fly it, obviously that won't be on there.
Sure. Well, that's what I meant, were the commercial ones, because I know we had talked about them a few episodes ago about being able to fly at night and things like that.
But I mean, those commercial drones are freaking huge. They're like the size of like a Volkswagen Beetle. So I can understand that needing to be registered, because if it runs into an airplane, it's going to do some significant damage.
Yeah, so. For sure. I mean, it's hell, a seagull can do some significant damage. You know, I know what you mean.
A goose, you know. So yeah, but so those two apps are pretty cool. Then the last one I'll say is completely optional. If the first five apps that I've said are for identifying UFOs, then the last one is for potentially attracting UFOs.
So makeup, cologne, a thick wallet, right?
Does a thick wallet attract people?
It can, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, he got that money.
No, he just carries all his receipts.
And it's all receipts. A spender, not a saver.
So this last app is the CE5 contact app.
Again, very great app.
So if y'all are not aware of CE5, go back and listen to our episode. We talked about the CE5 documentary. But basically, you know, Dr. Stephen Greer, his whole thing around... his whole basis is that we're basically being lied to, that the extraterrestrials or alien life are not hostile, but that's what the government is spinning it as. And so he's taken it upon himself and trying to inspire people around the world to go out and initiate contact with these alien extraterrestrial life on behalf of humanity, instead of waiting or expecting the government to do it on behalf of humanity for us. So what this app does is it basically gives you two things. One, it allows you to network with other people who have gotten the app in the area. And then two, it gives you step-by-step instructions on how to make peaceful contact through his CE5 method. I've used it a couple of times out in the backyard before it got too cold to go out there and do anything with it. But it's pretty, I mean, you basically, you meditate, And you focus on, well, first you play these tones, happens to be three tones, if anybody from Hellier is listening. And you play these tones, and it's supposed to somehow, through electromagnetic waves or whatever, let these beings and crafts know that you have the intent of making contact. And then you meditate, and when you meditate, you go out mindfully and you seek entities out in space. And then you basically show them where you are in relation to the galaxy, the solar system, within the solar system on Earth, and then where on Earth, so on and so forth, all the way down to where you're sitting. Then you tell them again, kind of in this meditation, what type of equipment you're going to be using to interact with them. And then you just basically wait, and then they show up. Now, in the case of when I did it out in my backyard with my brother, we didn't get any visual contact, but we both got some kind of weird mental stuff going on, which I think I've talked about on the show before, mm-hmm. during Creepy Ketchup.
Yep.
But, you know, I would say that, Stefan, you know, you and I were doing this kind of CE5 stuff back before we knew it was a method.
Yeah, we were way cooler. Yeah. You know, we were doing something before it got cool.
Yeah. But, I mean, and so we've obviously had some amazing sightings in the backyard. So.
For sure.
So that's my five, or I guess six, if you count the CE5 apps that I use. And then the last couple of things that I'd like to talk about is actual equipment. Okay. So I know that one of the things that you and I have both used that we've cautioned heavily, and so I'll put a caution. But that is a green laser pointer, a nice high power green laser pointer. It comes in handy for two things. One, if you're with other people and you think you saw something in a given area, because you can see the beam of a green laser pointer, you can show them where in the sky you thought you saw something. And so then they can start looking in that part of the sky. And the second one is if you are sure, if you see something and you are sure it is not an airplane or a helicopter, you can use it to signal that thing. And so we've done that a couple of times and gotten responses back. And that's one of the things that a lot of these, a lot of UAP and UFO sighting individuals will say, is that when they signal these craft, they respond.
Yeah.
They,
especially the CE5 folks, Greer, and then they use those and have used those for quite some time.
Yeah. Now, according to a lot of other reports, too, you can use anything like a flashlight. You can blink a flashlight at them. I just like the idea of a laser pointer because I can see the beam, and so I know that I'm getting it close to wherever I'm seeing. Mm-hmm. With a flashlight, I can point it in that general direction, but I really don't know, you know, if it's getting close to where I've seen stuff at.
Right, and we know that laser beam is shooting through space, whereas the flashlight, it's gonna dissipate.
Yeah, right. Now one of the really cool things that I have a red laser pointer and then like a blue one, and the blue one is like a black light type. Yeah. It is what it kind of shows.
Yeah,
off
I have one of those as well. It's like the
red is not very functional because you see the end of the dot, but you can't see the path that it takes. The blue one, though, you can't see a little bit. And then, like I said, it's just really cool that it kind of shows off that black light kind of appearance. So it makes me wonder if, you know, if different color light would have a different effect or a different result.
Right. Right. Yeah. And, you know, you can get these super cheap on Amazon, super cheap on Wish. I got mine on Wish.com for like $1 free shipping, and it's bomb diggity.
I got, so the three that I have, I got them on eBay for $13 for all three of them. So, I mean, it wasn't, they used to be, you want to try to look for quote unquote high power, but they take like AAA or AA batteries. It's not like you're, you know, going out and buying a stick of plutonium to power your laser.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I said. I got mine on Wish, and it's just as high powered as yours.
And then the last piece of equipment, and this is one that I'm still
we did want to say real quick though, the warning, don't forget, is please do not shine this directly at the object, because just in case it is some sort of military craft or some sort of plane or helicopter, you could potentially blind someone. Among other things, it can mess them up. So even with that, we tend to like circle around it or flash near it. Even then, we don't try to flash the light directly on the light we see.
So don't, and the last thing you want to have happen is for the federal government to show up at your house because you're shining green laser pointers.
And there are stories of that happening, so be very, very cautious.
And then the last piece of warning, this is when I started the show kind of talking about, and I am still in search of the best option, is a good night vision or full spectrum camera,
right?
Because, you know, most cameras don't film well in low light, no light situations. Like, you can't go and take your home movie theater, home movie camera.
Your entire movie.
You can't take that out there and film the night sky because it's just
I bet you that dude that has a helicopter, I bet you he has a home movie theater.
Well, yeah, I bet he does. I bet he does.
Yeah.
Actually, he may not. What if his house is like tiny and he drives a 1985.
Right, he spent all his money on the helicopter. That's some stuff I would do.
That's like, you know, the people who drive those donk cars, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That's like a 1985 Buick Skylark, but it's got like 25-inch chrome wheels.
Right.
But anyway, so I've done quite a bit of research trying to find the best option, and it'd be interesting to hear if anybody listening has something that they use for, you know, UAP UFO night video. But there's a really cool, expensive but cool camera called the Psionix Aurora Sport, and it is a full spectrum camera. And I've seen some amazing video of it being used in very low light situations, and you can see the night sky great. Mm-hmm. My only problem with it is the Sport, number one, is $400.
Whew.
Yeah. And number two, it only takes video in 720p.
That's
and so whatever you get is fuzzy and pixelated, which ain't convincing nobody.
I'm just like, come on, Apple, come on, Android. Why ain't y'all got night vision and full spectrum on these suckers yet? I can zoom 100 times to the moon, but I can't night vision yet, or full spectrum, or any of that.
Well, you can go out and buy the full spectrum app for your phone.
Oh yeah.
All it does is just change the screen pink.
Yeah. Same with the night vision app.
Yeah. But so what I'm looking into now, and I just picked up a cheap action camera, so like a GoPro, but it's like a knockoff GoPro.
Mm-hmm.
It was like $35 on Amazon.
Are you finding them Keith specials?
Yeah, well, so here's what I'm going to do. It's not a full spectrum camera, but I watched a couple of videos on YouTube from a few years ago, and what makes a camera not full spectrum is that it has a lens on the back of it that blocks out ultraviolet and IR light. It has a little piece of glass on the mm-hmm. back of the lens that blocks that stuff out. So I'm going to modify this camera to remove that piece of glass, thus making it a full spectrum camera, and see if that works.
If that works, I'm going to need you to do that to the 360 cam as well, because that would be sweet.
Because the what was it? The Ghost Stop is a company that sells full spectrum action cameras, and I guarantee you that's all they're doing.
Probably.
Is getting a cheap action camera, removing that piece of glass, slapping it in a Ghost Stop box, and selling it for $180.
So what you're saying is you figured out a way to make Fearscape some more money. If this works.
If this works. So, but yeah, so this one I picked up is it shoots in 4K at 30 frames per second, or 1080p at 60 frames per second, and 20 megapixel cameras and or 20 megapixel pictures.
Mr. Mix the Plick.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm gonna try to modify it, and hopefully it'll work, and we'll see where that goes.
Very, but, very cool, man. Make sure you do a paranormal tech video on that, because personally, I just like to watch that and see the progress. I know you're going to share it with me, but I think that would make a great episode of that.
Yeah, I was planning on it. So, but yeah, I mean, so either the $400 Psionics Aurora Sport, or potentially a $50 action camera. Now, you know, probably the lens in the Psionics Aurora might be a little bit better, but you know, it's 4K versus 720, so you know, you pick your preference.
Very cool.
So that is I think probably rounds out the whole idea of if you see a UAP UFO, how to signal it. Don't shine your green laser pointer at aircraft. I'll say it again. How to track it, how to capture it if you've got a camera, and then how to validate if what you saw was in fact a UAP or a UFO.
Yep. The only thing that I'll add to that, Josh, is to after the fact, you know, within that week, 2 weeks, you know, check the MUFON database, check the New Fork database to see if anyone else saw something similar around the same time, especially if it's in the same area. Those are good things. And MUFON, New Fork, I'm gonna need y'all to get some apps like soon. Like y'all need.
Well, yeah. Well, and that's the last little piece that I'll say. And this is not really around detecting or validating, but if you're comfortable enough to share your sighting on Facebook, go report it to MUFON.
Yes. Because I'll tell you, talking to Marcia, like, she was very, very knowledgeable and was very like, okay, what type was this? Okay, well, this sounds like this type and this. And so they're there to also provide you with information if you're a noob, you know, or just, you know, you don't really know that there are all these types of aircraft that have been reported. And she could say, hey, you know, this type of craft hasn't been reported since 1998. You know, and just things like that. So they are very, very knowledgeable. And usually if you report something, somebody usually wants to try to get in touch with you to try to talk about it and hear about it and try to validate it with you. So,
yep. So if you're you know, hopefully this stuff has helped you all and you're interested. And like I said, drop us some comments on Facebook or something. And, you know, let us know if you use different tools to go out there and look. Do you have a nice camera that you use to capture things at night that maybe we didn't talk about or I didn't know about? I'm always open to hear it, because I am slowly building my, you know, it's funny that, you know, like Keith Age has his kit for ghost hunting. Well, I'm building my kit for UAP hunting. So,
And you know, just a reminder, man, check out Shane Hurd's book on Amazon. You can even get it on Kindle, and if you got Kindle Unlimited, it's free right now. But it's Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, A Beginner's Guide to Researching UFOs. Because something else he gets into that we haven't touched on is if you see something land, like, yeah, he has tools and techniques of things to do then, you know, take pictures of impressions or anything like that. So there's it even goes into even more depth than what we talked about. I mean, it talks about contactees and everything like, yeah, that. So it's a really great book. And that's not the only book that's out there, but you know, it talks about all that other stuff. So,
well, and it's nice because you know that Shane has been doing the field investigations for a long time, and so it's nice to have a book from a person who's been doing the job.
Yeah.
Right. So it would be like if I try to write a book about what it's like to be an airline pilot and I've never flown a plane before.
Right. Right. You know? Right. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, and we've, and this goes for every field. There are books out there. You know, we've got Ken Gerhardt's books when it talks in terms of cryptids and tools you should use when you're searching for cryptids. And then, you know, your ghost hunting books and all of that. You know, do your research. It helps. I mean, it's helped, yeah, us big time, you know, our doing research and discovering these flight tracker apps and, yep, the ISS apps and all of the stuff to, you know, make us not see every single light in the sky as a UAP.
Right, exactly.
So that, and it ends up making them more special when we right. ruled out everything.
Well, and it, yeah, and I'm sure it was nice to be able to talk to Marcia.
Yep.
And let her know, you know, and I'm sure that she was probably even relieved a little bit to hear you, you know, if you said, well, I checked the Sky Safari app and there was no satellites in the yep. area, and I checked, you know, FlightAware and there was no planes in the area, and, you know, that it probably helps her make her case stronger.
Yeah. And she was excited because what I saw, she had never heard of a UAP doing that ever. And so she was very, very excited because this was something new. And I had no idea that was new. I just assumed that was, you know, I at this point, I assume everybody's seen something similar. And so that was really remarkable for me to learn. So very, very cool. Well, Josh, let's go ahead and get out of here. We'll get into our listener story and all that stuff and say our goodbyes. But yeah, like we said, you know, hit us up if you've got some tools that you use that we didn't talk about or some other great apps. We're always open to know. Yep. So, you know, if you're on our Facebook page or our group or anything like that, hit us up. We want to know.
Yep.
So we need to get out of here, but we need to get to our listener story first. And so this week, our listener story actually comes from someone who sent in a listener story way back in the day. This was our good buddy that had the Jin sighting that came onto our show. This was his friend, Joe Alvarez. And I believe Joe was also in the military as well as Stan was. So, but yeah, Joe has sent us one or two stories in the past, and it's been a minute since we've heard from him. But yeah, he sent me this story and I was like, all right, I'm gonna share it. So, yeah, this story comes from, Joe Alvarez, and I believe he's also out here in Arizona. I think he still lives in Tucson. So,
hey guys, it's been a while, but I was listening to your last podcast and something your sister Trisha said reminded me of another story. When I was about 7 or 8, I was woken up one night while sleeping in my sister's room at the old house with the red walls. I remember waking up and seeing the Virgin Mary in a 2x2 frame like some sort of Warhol painting. She was holographic for some reason, but she kept saying,
"It's okay. He's going to be okay."
And I remember when I woke up, I was startled, but I wasn't scared. A few minutes later, after I had started to fall back asleep, I heard the phone ring. Now, mind you, this is like 3 a.m. And I heard my stepmother start to wail. My dad runs in and wakes us up. Apparently her brother, which was my favorite of her brothers at the time, had been drinking with friends and was thrown from the car when it rolled. He was killed instantly. She was his next of kin, so she was notified first. But I'll never forget the peace I felt when I saw the holographic Mary. But I've never told my family what I'd seen. It's also very interesting to note that while my sister and I did try to go to church, our family was not religious at all.
Wow. Oh, thank you, Joe. That reminds me of my story when I was a kid when I saw my Aunt Kathy, because I thought she was like, you know, like a guardian angel or whatever, because that's what Sister Mary Patrick. And so because right. my memory had tied those two things together, guardian angel and the nun, Sister Mary Patrick, for a long time, my memory of it was this Virgin Mary image is how I kind of remembered it for a very long time until I got a little older and was able to kind of track down the proper memory.
Yeah, that's really neat.
Yep. Thank you, Joe, for still listening, man. We love that. We love you and Steven Stanek, man. We hope you guys are doing well. Really appreciate you listening and sharing that story. But we're going to go ahead and get out of here. But Josh, your brow is looking, it's on fleek. It's on fleek.
Well, you know, I plucked it today.
I know. I saw you do it in the webcam. So,
yeah.
But anyways, we're going to get out of here. Make sure to check out FearscapePodcast.com and FearscapeMedia.com for all of your podcast needs. Check out our YouTube channel. We finally hit over 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. Thank you guys so much. Like, you have no idea how much that means to us and what that's going to do for us in the future. Keep sharing, keep loving, keep plugging. and get out there, review the show, share the show, because that's all Josh wants. That's all he wants. That's why he plucks his brow for you.
That's right. So, well, and I'm keeping what I pluck too, so I can use them for spells later.
That's so weird. All right, we're gonna get out of here. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. This has been Stefan, and I will catch you in the ether. Nah, I'll catch you on the flip side.
This has been Josh. The truth is now.
Boom! And remember, folks, hold those blankets extra tight, because things tend to get spooky when you're listening to Fearscape. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
We hope you have enjoyed this guidepost on the road of high strangeness with us. And we thank you, as always, for listening and joining our caravan to the weird and unknown. Please consider supporting us as we continue our journey to find the answers we all seek. FearscapePodcast.com/support.